welcome. I hope you're doing well and enjoying spring. It's great to have you back with us again, and I hope that you're hungry to learn more about propaganda and manipulation that we are all subjected to on this planet. My name is Henrik. This is Red Eyes Radio, headquartered out of the crumbling country called Sweden, as the likes of Barbara Spector and her ilk is destroying it from the inside with state funding. Today, Denmark is on our plate in our series on the North. We've talked about Sweden, Norway, and Finland in regards to the horrors of an all-powerful state and how wrong things indeed can go. We have with us Danish author Mikkel Clair Nissen to talk about the hidden facts and realities of life in the much-celebrated democratic socialist state of Denmark that they never wanted you to know. His book, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed, does indeed expose Denmark, the supposed happiest nation on earth, for what it truly is, collectivism's biggest propaganda hoax. The book is a controversial exposé and a carefully detailed description of the awful emotional mind game that facilitates communism, socialism, and social liberalism, also known as collectivism. By the way, before we begin, our guest asked me to mention that if you find Mikkel Clair Nissen on Facebook, he will give you the ebook for free. We have links on redeyescreations.com. Mikkel, hi, and welcome. Thank you for coming on the program with us. It's nice to talk to you today.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
You bet. I'm very encouraged to see this kind of book coming out of Denmark. I don't want to begin too much on my own journey here out the gates, but maybe for 5 years or so, I've been trying to speak about the Nordic model, specifically some of the major issues that I've been seeing within Scandinavian society. And I feel at the beginning that I was very much alone. I realized that mostly only foreigners actually living in Scandinavian countries tended to agree with me on some level or not. And I think that's because they have an experience of a different type of society. They have something to compare it to. But more and more people consequently have begun to see through the lies, I think. And so this book, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed, is a really a great example towards this end and a very refreshing read. So tell us here first about your experiencing waking up to the nature of your own country, Denmark, and how and when. I guess you've traveled outside the country a little bit. You get to see some other aspects of the world, and you started to see how the collectivized society actually has shaped your own thinking, right? So tell us about that story a little bit.
Whoa, it's a long story. It's quite a path. I mean, I think I've always felt like the outsider, as I define in chapter 6 of the book, which is called The Odd One Out. And as you yourself just defined the fact that, you know, you could say that the collectivist agenda is to make anyone who might confront them with reality or in any way stand out to be denigrated. And so anyone who chooses to start thinking a little bit beyond or observing will be, you know, definitely made feel that they're different and different is no good. And so slowly you become an outsider if you should go too far.
Indeed. Now, how would you describe Danish society for someone who's never been there or lived there? We of course, can get in deeper into this aspect of how much it is being promoted around the world in different capacity by different think tanks, by different papers and television shows. I think Channel 4 over in the UK broadcast this Scandimania show recently. So what is the version that we're getting in the press versus the real version? How would you describe that difference to people?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify the fact that there is not much difference in any of the Scandinavian countries, and that includes Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland. I don't know too much about Iceland.
But the poor Icelanders usually get left out, don't they? No, they have some great stuff going up there. By the way, they've booted up some of their bankers a little bit. And although it might be collectivism in a different way, and we can certainly get into that later. But I think it's a little bit of a different flavor in Iceland, I think. But some things are very similar. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Well, I usually choose not. You know, if I don't know, I'd rather not talk about it.
Sure. So. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, but I've met people all over the world from the Scandinavian countries, and they all have the same, you know, sense of severe narcissism, which is my subject and which is what I specialize in. I think first of all, we have to define the fact that we don't live in the usual kind of socialism or communism that the world has been used to. And uniquely, the Scandinavian societies have created what I refer to as the illusion of freedom, which is a system that is quite different from the traditional socialism, because the job of fear, which you meet, you know, that the government, you know, will have to you know, constantly, you know, threaten people in a country like China, Cuba, etc., all these, you know, completely totalitarian societies. This system is quite different because we are supposed to be sensing freedom. We're supposed to be living an illusion of that we are free. And so I'm not sure about the other Swedish, how the governments work in Sweden or Norway, but in Denmark we have 8 political parties. Curiously, they're all on the left wing.
Same as Sweden.
Yeah, exactly. I would assume so, but I haven't, you know, I've just only focused on Denmark. And as I said, I grew up in Sweden, so it was the same kind of feeling. And when you look at Sweden, you know, it's not much different. It's the same crazy theories and laws that come out. You have to sit down to do your thing on the, you know, on the toilet. You know, last year, the government in Denmark came up with the idea that all Danish people had to read bedtime stories for their children. Oh, it sounds so great. You know, as I write in the book, anything that sounds good to the collectivist must also be good for anyone else.
Right,
and it's the whole aspect of being someone who's driven by severe narcissism, and you know, so to get back to the subject, what's quite different between our systems and China or the DGR, you know, the East, former East Germany, is the fact that even though the systems are the same, then the force of the coercion does not necessarily come that much from the government itself. It is a society itself that keeps society down. And it's because we don't live in a normal, you know, unity or society that just, you know, wants basically, we do live in a sect, and most people get very it creates quite a wow effect when you tell people that you live in a sect. They're like, oh, these people would be, you know, bowing to Satan or, I don't know, you know, a cult or this kind of thing.
Right.
And most people, you know, they already – the problem is that, you know, our societies are driven by severe arrogance. And because of this, most people have already defined what something is without actually knowing what it really is. And just to define what a sect is, well, when we look at people that, or if we take a person who's driven by severe pathological narcissism, also known as narcissistic personality disorder, or you could define it as psychopathic narcissism, around them, they create a sphere which is referred to as the sect. And within the sect, anyone, you know, that don't, you know, that can contribute to the narcissist with some kind of, I don't know, they, you know, for the narcissist to exploit them or for them to give them narcissistic supply, which is adulation, basically telling them that they're right all the time and et cetera. So if you can give them something that they need, you're welcome. But as soon as you start, you know, doing anything opposite,
criticizing, for example,
criticism is out of the question. I mean, any sect, and you could, we could go through sects all over the world, and they all. I'm actually writing the second book right now, and trying to once again trying to define to people how to observe what a sect is like, and one of the first rules of the sect, which is the first rule of our societies too, is don't criticize society. Or the sect, yeah, society citizen, or the society structure. You could also, you know, turn that over and say the sect, etc. So it's about not criticizing it, because the instant effect that any criticism will have is arrogance. The inability to be self-critical, which is a severe arrogance, also known as psychopathy. And so basically, you're held, how could you say, you know, this is the topic of time when I wouldn't, you know, I can lose it because there's so much information.
Let me bring you back on point a little bit and see if we could describe this a bit more. You're basically talking about a self-policing environment, right? The tyranny is not overt. It's I've described it as a tyranny in a velvet glove. It's very much a soft outward kind of layer to it, and most people who live their ordinary lives, daily lives, never kind of come up against the real resistance within the society. But if you're attempting to do something outside of the norm, outside of the box, you come up against the parameter of the playpen, and you very quickly feel, you know, how strong the tyranny actually is, right? So would you agree very much that that's the idea in Denmark as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you oppose anything, you know, within the sect, you will be severely punished, and it will cost you family members. It will cost you friends, and I have felt it on my, you know, I felt it. I've tried it. I've lost most of my friends, most of my family because of writing this book, and it's without even having debates with these people, just for the mere fact of thinking differently. They, you know. When people know subconsciously that they're in the wrong, and they subconsciously know that they're abused or subjugated, they will do anything to oppose this. Because we could take the example of, and I don't know who did this, but the guy in the 15th century who came up with the fact that the world was not, you know, flat, it was round. I mean, it's kind of the same example. You're telling people something, you know, they've lived with, you know, brought up with, and suddenly you're coming telling them that they're living an illusion. And it's like slapping them over the face, except this is a, you know, it's quite, you could say it's an example, it's same, but it's still different, because what happens here is what I refer to as a narcissistic injury, because they know they're doing wrong. I mean, anyone who looks at the Scandinavian system, or what we refer to as democratic socialism, of course they want to call it welfare society, except welfare is about helping the weakest people, not about helping people to get breast implants because they have low self-esteem, etc., which we're looking. No, but this has happened in Denmark.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
I'm not, and I'm assuming that the same kind of things would have happened in Sweden too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're not looking, and as the entitlement, which is a severe, severe tendency to if this tendency is occurring in a person, you are definitely looking at someone who is on the danger zone. Because with entitlement comes what I refer to as bad boundaries. And bad boundaries is what runs our society. People have no whatsoever, you know, understanding of your right to say no thank you. Mm-hmm. They don't grasp the simplicity of independence. I mean, they run with the flow. If there are more than one that agree with them, well, then they must be right.
Right.
Even though they're dead wrong. Yeah. I mean, it's the whole illusion that you know, people live with. I mean, I had a debate with a girl the other day. She said, you know, that, oh, there was some good to the way that things that had occurred in China. And I was like, what? What are you saying? Come on, 70 million people have died in that country.
I come across people all the time who defend it in one capacity. Maybe not defend it outright, but they definitely deny the severity of the genocide that has occurred within these countries, just because of the fact that there are similarities within the structural democratic socialist principles, you know?
Well, also the fact that they're socialists themselves.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but the main point was that this girl, you know, became as small as an ant within seconds. Okay. But the main point was that as soon as someone else encouraged her and said, "Oh, okay, there must be something good to it," whoa, she became she became an inflated tire again. You know, it's all about, you know, that's how the whole thing happened, you know, and this is what I'm trying to explain, even though it's really hard to explain narcissism just up front like this, but it all is about narcissistic supply. It is about being encouraged, even though it's stupid, you know, it can be the dumbest thing ever, you know, as you said, okay, yeah, well, people pee on the toilet seat, so let's make a law against people, you know, sitting down. And then, you know, if they said that to someone on the right wing, people would be like, what? And as soon as they walk over to their socialist friends, well, oh, okay, that sounds great. We should do that. Okay, blah. You know,
yeah.
It's all about this. This encouragement, you're talking on severe psychopathy here. We're talking, you know, people that don't fend for themselves. They don't think independently at all anymore because they're so severely deprived that they can't look in anymore. You know, I find it funny because I'm pretty sure even though we live in two different countries, you've heard the say as an independent, I'm assuming, and I'm talking to just as much of an individualist as myself.
Yes, you are.
yeah, I was assuming so, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, but the funny thing is that because you're positively critical, which is a very necessary thing, that's why we have freedom of speech, etc. And because you are, you know, you're positively critical towards the system, which is very necessary, you've met this compulsive one sentence that occurs all over, and even it's even traveled as far as America now, as if you criticize society, well, they will repeat themselves over and over again. If you're not happy, then move away.
Yeah, yeah, right.
The reverse psychological approach, which is, well, if you're not happy, why don't you move away? It's funny to live in societies, and it actually becomes hilarious for the true right winger, or I'd actually rather just call us people of freedom, or. You know.
Well, I think that, it's a parameter of within that political spectrum that is dominated by the left to call people who are concerned with freedom right-wingers, I think is nothing
exactly
to do with it, actually. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but well, the problem, and this is exactly what I wrote in my book, the invention of a right-wing on the left-wing, which is exactly the spectrum where within Hitler, you know, roamed, you know, and you know, I'm not a right winger. I would be ultimately right wing if we ever got into that debate, because I am a libertarian. And if you look at the Scandinavian system, we don't even meet. I mean, when I speak, I just went to America last year and I held a couple of public speeches, etc. And you know, I even spoke to the liberals over there. And most liberals are more right wing, farther right wing than most liberals in this, you know, in my own country.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
And most liberals in my own country, they don't think that you have the right to own a gun, and they're like, you know, it's the same projections. They said, oh, so you want a gun so you can kill people? I'm like, no, I want a gun in my own house so I can protect myself. I don't have a gun right now, but there's an axe standing next to my door. I'm not gonna hit someone with it unless they come to my house and try to hurt my children or something like that.
Right.
I don't want to hurt people. I just want the right to be able to defend myself.
Yeah.
Nothing else. And I don't want to walk around the street or doing nothing with it, that sort of thing. I do dearly believe that women in anywhere in the world should have the right to have a pepper spray in their pocket. I mean, how can, I mean, think about all the rapes, etc., that you could, you know, you could avoid if people knew that women could defend themselves,
yep,
you know,
etc. Right. Well, better if they had a handgun in their purse, you know. Then people would know. Well, that's just how it is, and this is very interesting. Before we get deeper into it, let me ask you this though, because let's assume we have someone listening who is basically, well, I've heard that, you know, Denmark is one of the happiest countries in the world. They end up just with Sweden and Finland and Norway, kind of high up on the think tank list of best countries in the world to live in. And so, what does Danish society pride itself on beyond, you know, the entitlement, democratic socialism? I mean, these are values that people out there might be, well, this is great, right? So how would you deconstruct that for someone and talk about the flip side to all these aspects that we hear are so dearly cherished?
I think it's all, I mean, I, of course, you know, I did chapter 7 in my book, completely destroys it, rips it to pieces and steps on it, the whole hoax about happiness. And I, you know, for a fact that, you know, no, it was nominated too. But the funny thing is that actually, Colombia was nominated as the first at some point too. And it's one of the poorest countries in the world. And the funny thing about, you know, I've traveled all the world. I've visited more than 35 countries in my life. I've traveled 14 years. And curiously, some of the most happy and genuinely happy people that I ever met in my life has been out of some of the most, you know, poorest countries in the world. But usually what I mean, we said like this, would you be happy if I gave you a sofa?
No.
Okay, so, you know, so the definition of happiness is different from people to people. But if I gave you freedom, would you be happy?
Yes.
Exactly. So, you know, but to a socialist, I can buy your happiness, because if I give you a sofa, you become happy. If I give you freedom on the right wing, or freedom, people who cares about freedom and stands freedom, the point of owning yourself, you know, that's happiness. I mean, I don't care if I have to endure the fact that, you know, I might end up in the street with my own children. I don't care. I just want my freedom. I just want the right to be the boss of myself. But these people don't understand that. They think that freedom is about envy, hurting people who are better than them.
I gotta chime in there a little bit. What about the idea of security and safety that we hear all the time in the Scandinavian countries as well? That's what it's really about, right? It's about the safety net that's in place. Nothing can happen to you. You can't really fall outside of that in a way of a comfort zone. Although this happens, you know, of course it is, but this is what they pride itself on, right?
It's always propaganda in socialist countries. I mean, they're even talking about how we have less serial killers. But then again, if you look at any socialist country, I don't care where you go in the world, you know for a fact that they keep, you know, everything that is negative away.
Yeah.
They don't want to show people these kind of things. We have the same problems as anywhere else. Just last year, one of my friends had three people. I'm not going to tell you from where. Doesn't matter. They broke into her house, and they almost strangled her son to death. Okay, she had no way of you know, defending herself or nothing.
Yeah.
And he ended up in intensive care for almost 3 weeks. Okay. And you know, he's in severe distress afterwards. He's had, you know, and he's still undergoing all kinds of, you know, mental. If he survives this, I'm so happy, because I mean, emotionally, this is something that really, really hurt him. And curiously, we're talking about safety. The strongest or the hardest punishment, or, you know, one of these guys got when they get caught, was 4 months.
Yeah.
4 months. 4 months. I mean, and as I say, and to create this illusion of freedom, one has to create a society where no one is critical of the state, of the government, in whatever way. So, of course, we've gotten to this point where people were like, oh, well, okay, everyone can make mistakes, oh, blah, 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 etc. So we shouldn't have harsh punishments, etc. And it's all about making sure that people understand that they're not that bad people. So, you know, it all goes together. No, we're not safe. And I feel, you know, I lived in one of the worst neighborhoods in LA just last year for 2 months, and I felt safer there than I do in my own little town here.
Really?
I do.
Why is that? Describe that to us a little bit. What's the difference for people who don't know?
Well, it's hard to explain. First of all, the chance that I got I get robbed in America is way higher. But when you've lived in America for a few years, you kind of understand that if you fear things, you attract them. And you know, I can walk the streets, and I've walked the worst areas in San Francisco, LA. Okay, I would stay away from South Central in LA, but there are neighborhoods where, of course, I mean, that's what liberalism or liberty gives you. Of course, there are going to be neighborhoods where, you know, people start taking over, but it's hard to explain. It's just a matter of knowing the fact that, first of all, police is there within seconds. Okay. Here, you know, I moved into a neighborhood just 3 years ago, within weeks, one of our neighbors were harassing us with extremely loud music, and I have two children. One is 6 today, and the other one's 8. So, you know, this guy was playing, you know, loud music until 2 or 3, you know, at night every weekend. And at some point I actually went to his door and I put a nice sign that said, you know, would you consider the fact that I'm a neighbor of yours and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, a really nice letter. And within a few days he came to me and he said, literally he looked at me and he said, you know what? There are people out here that have gotten their windows broken for less. And, you know, I closed my door and I called up the police and I said, this is a threat, et cetera. And she said, okay, I'd note it, et cetera. Nothing ever happened. But this case was just the start of it. The curious thing that happened was that I, you know, about a month later, I wake up in the, you know, it's about 2:30 in the morning. And my daughter, my smallest child, she was about 4 years then, three, four. She was crying in bed, and I'm waking up. You know, I sleep quite tough. You know, I sleep quite well when I sleep. So I didn't hear anything, but I'm waking up there, and I'm like, whoa, okay, this guy's playing loud music, and she was crying in bed. And I thought, you know, okay, well, you know, I went there and I comforted her. And then I went on and I called the police, and I called up and I said, you know what, could you help me? You know, I've had this and he's threatened me before and et cetera. And the guy says, he responds and he says, does the guy have any open windows? And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, does the guy have any open windows? And I'm like, what? It's 16 degrees minus outside. It's January, and why would he have open windows? What mm-hmm. has this got to do with the price of fish? So you know, he's like, oh, if you're going to talk to me like that, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what? I'm calling you. I need your help. Someone's threatened me, and he's harassed me enough, and now my daughter is crying in bed. I need some privacy here. Can you please come and have him, you know, turn his music down? I'm not going to go ask him because he's not. And they didn't help me. Nothing happened.
See, now you're the problem because now you're bringing the problem to them, right?
Exactly.
I've experienced that a couple of times too. My wife did too in Sweden a couple of times. Was a security guard, was this drunk asshole that kept bugging her. I wasn't there at that moment actually, but kept bugging her in a bus station in Gothenburg. And it was like no one, she literally like asked for help around the, you know, the men or the guys that were there, you know. Please, can you help me? You know, she even walked up to the security guard that was there and he looked at her like, you know, yeah, whatever. I'll get to it. You know, just hang on, wait a minute, you know, kind of thing. So it's a cold and closed off society where people are isolated. See, this is the oxymoron with the collectivism that we get, right? You think in a collectivized society, everyone would be helping out. There would be a good camaraderie kind of sense of it.
Mm-mm.
Far from it. It's quite the opposite.
It's quite the opposite. Exactly. And that's the curious part about it. I mean, I had a very, very, very clever woman, not long ago, who said that freedom brings people together. collectivism brings them far.
Yeah, that's right.
So it is, as you said, it's an oxymoron, because what is the logic to that? But the main point is that it's because collectivism is driven on coercion. It is about becoming what everyone thinks. Rather, you know what, this is a really great thing. I had a great talk to someone this morning, and it up popped a note, because I'm the type of guy who, you know, unlike most people in a country like this, I will speak to anyone at the gas station, at the bus stop, wherever I care, and I don't care what people think. And I don't need to be drunk or on drugs to do it.
Yeah,
but that's the curious thing.
Oh, sure, I know. I know what you're talking about.
Look at the Swedish people. Look at the Danish people. To go on the dance floor takes them a six-pack.
That's right. That's
right. You know, there is no – people have no whatsoever steam. No steam whatsoever. So this morning I was at the bus stop, and I actually heard a guy. And one thing is I don't smoke weed or do drugs myself, but I don't care about it. I believe in freedom, so if you want to do drugs, it's your choice. So the main point was that I overheard this conversation, and a guy was telling his friend, could you take your day off school because I want to go into Christiania in Copenhagen and buy some marijuana.
Is that still legal there, by the way?
Oh, yeah, of course it's
okay.
Illegal.
Yeah. So yeah. People who don't know that listening, there's a small, what would you call it? A small little state of its own inside of Copenhagen?
A little anarchy zone kind
of
thing.
Where you can go and get drugs and other things, right?
Yeah, it's just because the government is really weird. I mean, the whole Christiania thing was taken over. I think it was in 72 when some squatters, you know, they walked. You know, there was some barracks the government owned. They weren't, you know, occupied. They weren't used. And some people said, "Oh, okay, they're not used, so now we can take them." You know, it's the typical thing. They don't understand yours and mine anymore. You know, this is what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about the inability to understand personal boundaries, you know, they don't. It's the same thing about the TV we have. We have to pay for a TV. We don't even have the right to say no, thank you, too. You know,
TV license, mandatory TV license fees.
Yeah, the license system we have. Yep. I mean, it's all about bad boundaries, severe narcissism.
Yeah.
But curiously, this guy and I, you know, this conversation ended up with a great note, because I've actually started writing the ideology. I don't know if, you know, a lot of people talk about individualism, and I thought to myself, you know what, I'm going to sit down and write the ideology of individualism. So I actually started doing that about 3 or 4 months ago. I've got tons of notes laying around for about 6 years waiting for this to happen. So, but the main point was that, you know, through my life and through debates with people in public, these kind of things, you know, happen, and I get my notes from these debates. And this morning, I overheard this guy, and he was telling his friend, you know, to take your day off school and we'll go to, you know, buy some weed in Copenhagen. And you know, as soon as the call was over, I yelled at the guy and I said, "Why don't you grow your weed in your own garden rather than, you know, driving an hour by train into Copenhagen, et cetera?" And it was like, he's like, "Oh, I consider that." And we had a little conversation. And we had a conversation where I tried to explain to him how we could get into that a little later in the program too. The process of basically that we're born as narcissists, we're extremely arrogant, egocentric, et cetera, and so forth. We develop our ego. Our parents are supposed to teach us that, you know, just because he has a little more cake than you doesn't mean you get the same, or et cetera, et cetera. But the main point was I tried to explain to him that through collectivism, we're supposed to stay collectivist rather than becoming individualist, which is the process that occurs. You know, that's why you meet the rebellion. You are part of a collectivism as a child, which is the family structure, and so you're supposed to be denigrated and create low self-esteem. And so this is causes, because anyone who's driven by severe narcissism are always dependent on others.
Yeah.
And through this, you become dependent. And of course, they're going to give you all the gifts from the government and et cetera. And so they have you they've basically bought your opinion. But the main point was the guy was listening very, you know, wisely. And at some point he says, we were getting into the subject of education. And he said, "I don't really know what I want to be." And I said, you know what? Why don't you try to educate you on becoming you first?
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I mean when I'm talking individualism with people. Because you cannot, and this is one thing I really, really, really want to state to the audience, listen to this show. You cannot achieve freedom unless you have achieved freedom within yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, this is one of the most important things ever. Most people are like, you know, I meet people, conservatives in America, et cetera, you know, and people, I've met libertarians, really, really powerful libertarians, where I've said, you know what, I don't feel that you understand freedom 100% because you need to achieve it personally too. You know, you might think that freedom is just about the Constitution, et cetera. We're talking about the American Constitution.
Sure, yeah.
So, but you need to achieve this. If you don't understand your own arrogance, if you don't understand these things, and this is why I'm saying that it's so important to understand narcissism, and this is why I fell in love with narcissism about 12 years ago, and which eventually became this book, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed. It woke me up. It woke me up, and I'm actually, you know, I was driven, and I am still driven by narcissism. I mean, it's impossible to have lived in a society and grown up in a society like this, and then achieve very, very high self-esteem within 12, you know, just a little over a decade. It's simply impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten very far. I've you know, demolished, if I could say so, three severe narcissistic tendencies amongst others, my entitlement, etc. And so I also, you know, I explain in my book, I used to be a socialist. I used to travel the world and tell everyone about the prophecy and this utopian great Scandinavian society, you know, etc. You know, no, yeah. I used to be brainwashed myself.
Well, that's I think everyone who goes through the school of the Scandinavian indoctrination system, very few manage to on their own kind of at the outset break free from it. Usually it takes some kind of experience, something else that happens to you or something that kind of knocks you outside of it. That's also something I feel we need to explain to the audience here, that most people are the reason why you hear so few critical voices of this society is because everyone is indoctrinated and induced into being a promoter of it, right? So when you hear something on the TV about it or whatever, you say, well, if it was a corruption within the country, if things were bad, more and more people would speak out about it. But the complacency of it must be a sign that it is a success and it's working, right?
Yeah. Well, one would think so, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the query here is, and I really hate brainwashed. I really hate the word brainwashed or indoctrinated, this kind of thing, because it sounds like voodoo. You know, it does. It's nice, like, ooh, it's,
well,
all
you see a big machine with the electromagnetic,
yeah, exactly, with one of those spiral things in front of your eyes, and
sure,
they make you think that it's all good socialism. No, it's all about one single thing. If you create severe narcissism in someone, a arrogance, as soon as arrogance occurs, you will have achieved something within the person, which is called magical thinking, which is the ability to create illusions of almost anything. I'll give you a good example of the illusion that these people, you know, make themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good socialist. I am the good Samaritan. Okay. So I, you know, help the weak people. Well, stepping aside from that, they forget to tell you that they get and they get and they get and they get this and this and that and that and that, et cetera, and then they also get this, you know. So the point is that the focus is on, I'm a good person because I care for others, except they're obscuring the fact that they, all it's about is themselves.
And being and getting the entitlement from the society structure.
We're talking about entitlements, absolutely. Yeah. I should have been more, you know, yeah.
Oh no, that's good. So the, let's see if we can get closer a little bit to this as well, though. Because you mentioned that there is an automatic defense mechanism that kicks in people when you try to criticize the society, their sect, yep, that you live in, as you said. So the process is then here. We have a couple of different angles that we can watch this on, and where I think you're going with this is that we are born, or at a certain development stage, we develop the narcissism, right? But within Scandinavian countries, we do not kind of graduate from that stage of development. That is something that, to me, that I'm seeing it is encouraged because it creates a particular individual that is very beneficial to the bigger state structure, if you will. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm even going to go further with that than you're going right now. Most people in our societies have an ego, a personal self of about a six-year-old. It sounds quite harsh, but when you start looking at the facts, you must have observed socialist debate or talk to each other or encourage each other with their socialism or whatever. Not long ago, I overlooked my children. At one point, my smallest child looks at the oldest one and says, "Isn't it great that we have these octopus? Because otherwise, we wouldn't have ink for the pens." And the big one looks down at her and she says, "Yeah, that sounds really cool. That's great. Yeah, whatever." You know, she confirmed her. And when you look at socialists in Scandinavia, it's the same kind of thing. It might not specifically be like that, but I mean, it's the same kind of emotional process. I mean, I could get further again. I'm not so much the kind of Freudian type of, person.
Sure.
Who,
yeah.
But still, there are certain things because this guy laid the basics, and he also laid the basics for what narcissism is, etc. And one phenomenon I really like was the fact that he described how an infant child has no boundaries between the mother and themselves in the first year and a half. And curiously, when you look later in life, this is what people become in Scandinavia. These boundaries, which are then when you're looking at adulthood, they've become bad boundaries. The inability to understand that there is a difference between you and yourself. And if you ever, if you ever recall, and anyone, this is something that everyone should be able to relate to, if you look at socialist and then you go into a schoolyard at any school, I don't care where, and you look at the behavior, how they the best argument against, "Oh, okay, I'm telling you that so, this government is not very good, etc. Oh, you're an idiot." Okay, it's the same behavior that you meet in the schoolyard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The arguments and the way that these people behave are like little children, not aged more than about 6 years old. The only thing is that their body are developing, but their ego is not.
Yeah, they're grown up, but they're not adults.
They're not adults, emotionally, not at all.
Yeah. So tell us a bit more about that process. How that works, do you think, then? And if that is an objective that they're trying to achieve within the society because they know on the higher levels, that this leads to a control a favor of this control, shall we say. Is this how it goes, or has all of the development of this been an accident within the Scandinavian countries? Where does it come from?
I don't think that anyone ever, I don't think any, and there's no, I don't believe there's anything such as a, dead evil human being. You're not born evil. So, the agenda, at some point when it all started and yours and my society, all this started, it's an emotional process that has been ongoing for, forever, basically, since Karl Marx came up with this stupid idea. So we're talking about 160 years now,
Yeah.
So it's a slow process. And as I say, into most of the people, in other programs too, I mean, the process just basically speeded up after, after the Hitler destroyed Europe.
Second World War, yeah, that's
exactly,
what I say too.
Exactly, because Hitler destroyed all of Europe, and this created an extreme dependence on, and so came the governments and says, "Oh, we're going to help you, save you, etc." This whole process, and basically, I say that we're all neo-Nazis. We could say we're walking the footsteps of Hitler. I don't think he quite wanted to, but if you look at the nationalism, the levels of nationalism, I mean, he's basically achieved the Scandinavian countries have achieved this extreme system. They just don't have a big front, some kind of you know, front muddle one big man that puts us all right. But no, I don't think that it was anticipated. I don't think that anyone sat down and said, oh, okay, this is how it's going to work, and this is how we're going to brainwash them. And I like conspiracy theories, but I try always to be objective in regards to these kind of things. I just think that it has happened, and the fact, it's like, if you observe, and I've studied many different sects, you know, around the world, the Waco in Texas, and I use them as examples in my book. And one of the best ones is the People's Temple, where I think it was 912 people committed a mass murder suicide. I mean, over a couple hours, it was crazy. Mm. I mean, and so this is the lemming effect. You know what I mean? It's what we're enduring in this country, in this part of the world too. People could just, I mean, to have the strength to be like you and I, it takes quite a lot, because you feel the same as I do. The pressure, the constant. The constant threat. It's not like, oh, I'm going to give you an axe or cut your head off or kill you. But there's always this force, this don't tell me the truth. Don't, right. Et cetera. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of thing. And to understand what it is to be truly subjugated, you know, emotionally, and to understand what it is to be a member of a sect, one needs to understand what it really is for those kind of people, including ourselves, to let go and say, okay, I am willing to learn, to let go of this and lose my family, my friends, etc., to achieve this freedom. And most people choose not to. So this is what runs our society. You know what I mean?
Do you think then that this is an unconscious process, that the defense of the system is actually a subconscious admission that there are things wrong with it, but they subconsciously know that if I open that door, if I let in that criticism, and if I even accept a little bit of it, I'm going to be in big trouble, because I'm going to literally demolish the lie that I've been living on for such a long time. Is that how complicated it really is?
No.
No?
It is for you and I, because you get to a point where you kind of know the truth. And then you take a choice, but the choice becomes what you and I. It always does. I really believe if you're this far, you know, if you really understand the truth and you get to that point, you will let go. But for those, you have to understand that they're sick, they're subjugated. No, they don't have a choice. It's their, as I explained again, it's their arrogance, their inability to be self-critical, their inability to be they need, they're deeply dependent on the system, and so these emotional factors control them more than anything you can give them. So no, I would say no.
All right. Well, we have much more to discuss here, obviously, but let's take a little break here in a few minutes and pick up after the break and talk more about the happy pills, the usage of that in Denmark, SSRIs. There's a number of things that kind of has complicated the picture in terms of the happiest country in the world and everything else. There's just so many other points of critique, if you will, that I want to try to get to as well. But before we do that, though, let's give out the website addresses. People can connect with you on Facebook, you said, of course. The title again, then, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed. Where can people pick up copies of this book, Mikkel?
Well, unfortunately, the only place at this moment where you can actually purchase the book is on Amazon, where you can buy it for your Kindle. But as I have I've tried to put forth in my work, I don't care much for money. I care only for one single thing, and that's to expose what's going on here, because we're really, this is not just about us. I also see America being turned into a country that I don't like, and a country that gave me the emotional freedom that I have today. And I dearly love America for this. They gave me something unique and I could work on. So if you can find me and you know, I accept all friend requests, you can find me, friend me on Facebook, and I will give you the book for free. And I'd happily give away the book, the PDF, like I usually do to me.
That's great. That's very kind of you. Tell us about the website where people can find that.
Well, you can read the first three chapters on manipulism.com, and that is manipulism, not manipulation. Manipulism.com. And at manipulism, we should get into that after the show too, because most people, you know, they assume that manipulism is a definition of socialism, but it's not. Manipulism is a social psychological theory, which describes basically what you and I are living with, you know, the phenomena of the entelaw, which is a subjugation technique that is used to hold people down so they can control them.
Yeah, let's definitely talk more about the jantelag. I've brought that up in numerous programs, and I think some of our listeners will be familiar with that, but we'll reiterate some of those, the 10 rules, as it were, from there after the break here. But yeah, stay with us, Mikkel. We'll be right back after the break.